God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things.
Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6 says, "Without faith, it is impossible to please God." Thank you for tuning in to Southwest Radio Church's Watchman on the Wall program. I am Pastor Larry. In the mid-19th century, there was a man by the name of Blondin. He was an acrobat and a tightrope artist. Blondin held audiences spellbound as he crossed Niagara Falls on a tightrope. One day he did his tightrope walk pushing a wheelbarrow. The crowds went wild. At the end of his stunt, Blondin addressed the crowd and asked, "Do you believe that I can do the same thing with a grown man in the wheelbarrow?" The crowd started chanting, "You can do it! You can do it!" It was obvious that everyone in the crowd believed that Blondin could push a grown man in a wheelbarrow across a tightrope suspended above Niagara Falls. Blondin pointed to a man in the crowd and asked, "Do you believe I can push a grown man in a wheelbarrow across the falls on a tightrope?" And the man said, "Yes, I do." Blondin invited him to come forward and sit in the wheelbarrow. The man refused. You see, friends, faith is more than intellectual assent to a statement or proposition. It is a total surrender to the object of faith. That's the kind of faith that pleases God. Is that your kind of faith? I am delighted to introduce our guest for this show. His name is Pastor Clarence Hill. He is the pastor of the Antioch Community Church in Norman, Oklahoma. We're going to have an intelligent, Bible-based, Christ-centered discussion on the question of race in America. Thank you so much, Pastor Hill, for being on our program.
It's my pleasure, Larry. It's just good to be here with you.
Well, let's first talk a little bit about Antioch Community Church and tell us a little bit about the ministry there.
Well, my wife and I took over leadership here at Antioch about 2 years ago, and it's just been great. This body and this family, we are just committed to getting the gospel and the good news out to the nations and to go after hard situations. So we're a multi-ethnic congregation who really seeks to be involved in things that are going on and to, you know, really focus on loving our neighbors, building community. We're really strong on going after life groups. We just believe that one of the best way to make disciples of Jesus is by getting face-to-face and in homes.
Wow, great. Well, as we get into our show, tell us about, I think you call it the dream clock and the us versus them mentality. Is this an us versus them situation, or is that really a misnomer?
You know, the things that we see going on in the news is really heartbreaking to think that we've gotten to a place where we're identifying one another based on some of the terms that we use, our political parties, etc. And there's so many other categories on the table where we actually connect and share life experiences and we can walk together as neighbors. But the us-them narrative basically says that the us's are good and the them's are bad. And the us's have good intentions and the them's have bad intentions, so we treat one another differently. And what we've discovered by bringing people to the table at our conferences and creating spaces for people just to share their stories and kind of humanize the conversation again is that you actually have allies if you address different topics like, you know, caring for the homeless. People from different political parties can work together to make a difference. And definitely of different skin colors. But sometimes the context that we set up causes this harsh us-them picture. And, you know, even in the history of our country, of course, I just think we've got a lot of debris left in the water that was never cleaned up after our, you know, our hard, painful past in America around race.
Yes, it was very painful, and there is a lot of debris or residue. And now, as I understand it, you're an African-American pastor, and you have people of color, all kinds of ethnicities in the congregation.
That's very true. I think when we took over, I would say that our church was close to about 85% white. I would say now it's probably about 70%. And we're on a journey together, even as a church, to really keep that John 17:21 unity, you know, where Jesus prays for us to be one so that the world would know And we just believe that there's a message in us walking together. But with these narratives going on in the world right now, it's caused us to have some open dialogue and to talk and to get more biblical language, which to me is more unifying, so that we can just share our stories and have a biblical worldview about how we handle these situations and conversations.
Well, tell us about seeing others. I mean, the Bible tells us to esteem others better than ourselves, and I certainly think that's important. Respect, honor, dignity. You can never have a meaningful and satisfying relationship without that.
Sure. You know, so 1 o'clock was us then. 2 o'clock is seeing others. And the cool thing about seeing others is just a recognition that in my us world, my natural us world, that when people look at me or when I look at my background, there's a group of us that I can talk to them easier because we have a shared background. We have shared experiences. They're the same skin color, so they kind of get the same story. And that would be the same for any other skin color or any other ethnic group. Well, it's easy for me to create what I call a palace, and that's a world where it's kind of homogenous, and I only see the people that look like me, or I'm prone to be at restaurants, grocery stores, gas stations, where just the us's are dominant. And if I'm choosing to dwell in a certain space, my place of worship, my neighborhood, is typically going to be more homogenous than it is diverse. Now, some people can't control that, but sometimes we just gravitate towards what's familiar. So we recognize, okay, I can do some things without even realizing it, that if I'm not intentional, I'm going to end up around people that I'm most comfortable with, and usually that keeps us in the same wealth class and the same skin color. So seeing others at 2 o'clock simply says to start greeting and engaging the people, the thems, so to speak, that are already in your world. Before you look down at someone else, or maybe realize that someone of a different ethnicity is right in your space, instead of just giving them a two-second conversation, have the same kind of conversations with them as you would with one of your us's. You learn their names. You ask about how their weekends went. You ask about their children also. But seeing others, and there's a Bible verse behind it, you know, Matthew 5, 46, 47. It talks about Jesus saying, hey, if you just greet your own brothers, if you only show kindness to your brothers, your kin, the people that look like you, same background, he said, what are you doing more than an unbeliever? So the challenge there is not just to love people who will love us back, but to see other people. And the challenge at 2 o'clock is to greet somebody. Go out the door, go to the gas station, someone you typically would not speak to, just start by saying hi.
Yeah, I can identify. We kind of, even in an airplane or in a train station, we see someone that's the same skin color, and it's easy. Or maybe if he talks or she talks the way we do. On the other hand, we have to, as you say, be intentional and break that kind of barrier there, the strangeness that we sometimes feel. So is this something that you actually bring into your pulpit ministry, or Sunday school, or how do you handle that?
So soon we'll have the Dream Clock. You can sign up at dreamclock.org. And so once, you know, the Justice Floyd situation happened, a lot of people began to reach out, and they wanted to go through the training. And so we're going to put everything online so that people can subscribe and join the process on their own. We're going to make it very easy. Most of these hours come out of, you know, ideas that Jesus talked about. So soon we'll also put something out that's scripturally based so that people can say, hey, what am I doing here? Am I trying to go after a conversation that's unnecessary? We say, no, we're just learning how to love our neighbors really, really well. So, yeah, we'll put out some more trainings. And we'll have something prepped for 2021 also. That'll be really, really great.
And that's dreamclock.org?
Yes, it is.
Wow. And your church facility, I think, is within a stone's throw of Oklahoma University. So you probably have a great mixed diversity there.
Yes, we do. And it's pretty exciting that not only do we have diversity in our local church, but there's a great, you know, work of church unity going on in our city right now, and I'm just honored to be a part of it, to see, you know, several pastors wanting to work together and campus ministries seeking to work together. And so we're just looking to see the unity of Jesus be shown as a as an answer, a solution, a place of peace in times like these.
Well, now, what about showing up? I mean, you know, we have to spend some time together and communicate with each other. And I guess you just touched on that a little bit, but I think the fact that it needs to be intentional needs us to think of Christ as Lord, and he's the one who's leading the ship, so to speak. He's our pilot. And we certainly have to look at him reaching out to the Syrophoenician woman, to Gentiles, to Jews, to rich and poor. And I think that's an interesting lesson there for us.
That's absolutely right. Sometimes we read the scriptures and don't realize that the story of Jesus, his life, was against the backdrop that could have been familiar, you know, to the 60s in America, where Jews were not supposed to even eat with Samaritans. And so he faced the racial divide. And so sometimes when we see those scriptures like love your neighbor, greet those that aren't your brothers, we don't look at it in a context of the fact that Jesus is addressing how to handle and how to break down division. So showing up simply says that do like Jesus did. Jesus put himself in spaces, and he took his disciples into spaces where there were Samaritans. You know, that's why it would specifically say that Jesus went to Samaria. He went through Samaria, and it brings that out because a lot of times the Jews will go around Samaria. So be very intentional. That's what we encourage people. Hey, go to a restaurant. Go to a space. Go to a grocery store. There's still food on the inside there, but be around a different people group. So that we can be in spaces where we can love other nations well.
Now, what about coming to the table?
Yeah, that's a great one, because when you have division, you don't come to the table together. That's why Peter got up from the table when he was at the church of Antioch in Acts, in the book of Acts. He got up from the table and left, and Paul tells this story in Galatians. And Paul had to call him out because he got up from the table because he had been sitting down eating with Gentiles. But then when the Jews came, he got up because it wasn't cool to eat with unbelievers like that. So coming to the table is a big deal. And so we encourage people to open up your home and invite somebody to the table. So the big question is, when was the last time that an individual has had someone of a different ethnicity, a different ethnic group, to your home, to the dinner table? That's the challenge. And if we start doing that, we probably wouldn't see what's going on in the streets right now.
Amen. Well, Pastor Clarence, is there a reliable guide in working together and in serving together that we all can read and consult?
Yes, we're putting the information on dreamclock.org. It will put you on a list where you'll get updates. We're also been privileged to have the Dream Clock being shared in the Oklahoman for the past few Sundays. So we're actually at the 8 o'clock hour. We'll be coming out this Sunday in the Oklahoman. So you can check the Sunday Oklahoman for that. And again, you can sign up at dreamclock.org, and we send out weekly updates that help people start the journey.
I know the concept of community is very important in biblical Christianity, and I think when biblical principles are applied, what kind of community can we experience, not just look at, but actually experience in our own lives?
You know, the powerful thing is that when you begin to engage communities that aren't like you, there's a little bit of a shock value to help us open our eyes and see a different perspective of, wow, look at how they obey Jesus with so much less money. Wow, look at how they obey Jesus. And when they read the scriptures that says, open your home, this is how they interpret it. And you're like, oh, I thought they just meant for an hour on Sunday. For them, it may be something different, but it helps us to learn the Word of God better when we're around different people groups. And that's why I believe Jesus often referred to Samaritans. He referred to the widow woman who was poor. because he likes to challenge our, yes, he likes to challenge how much we're giving 100% to obeying the commands and the way of life that he taught us to live by.
I think he was very intentional because, you know, when you look at the story of the Good Samaritan, the priest and the Levite, the religious hoi polloi, so to speak, the ones who should be behaving responsibly, they did not, but the Samaritan did. And you know, I think he said that in that way to show that even Samaritans are good, are loved by God. They have, you know, they have worth in the kingdom of God. And I think it was very intentional and purposeful in that. In fact, when we look at the Samaritan woman, I believe that the first person where he clearly identified himself as the Messiah was a woman, and not only was she a woman, she was a Samaritan woman.
Yes, yes. And I think it's brilliant. I mean, I think it's an understatement, of course, to think about that Jesus, of course, has the best way of doing everything. But think about the fact that he has honored Samaritans as the heroes of his stories. Because typically when you have ethnic division, you have to make that people group look bad to justify your hatred towards them. So Jesus says, you know, I'm not just going to run around telling everybody they need to change their attitude towards Samaritans. He says, I'm going to use Samaritans as the heroes of my story. And he's not making up a bunch of lies about their character. He's just going to tell the stories of their character that aren't being told. Because if you're in a racially divided area, each group is going to be saying the worst things about the other group, and they're not going to be able to share anything good about the thems. Well, Jesus, as brilliant as he is, he's breaking down our wrong attitudes towards our neighbors by celebrating the Samaritans instead of celebrating his own group.
Well, we're about out of time, but Clarence, thank you so much for being on the show. This is very helpful and very insightful. God bless you and your ministry.
Thank you.
Matthew, please tell our listeners about our offer to for this show, to those who have been listening to this discussion. What a wonderful discussion.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. Our special offer today is the best-selling book by Ken Ham and Charles Ware titled One Race, One Blood. You can have a copy of this eye-opening book for a gift of $15 if you live in the United States, and $35 if you live in Canada. To place your order, just call our toll-free number, 1-800-652-1144. And you can order anytime online on our website at swrc.com. We also have the DVD with the same title, One Race, One Blood. You can have a copy of it for a gift of $10. Better yet, get both the book and the DVD for a gift of $20. That number again is 1-800-652-1144. The address to write is Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And the website is swrc.com. Here again is Pastor Larry.
A speech given by a black Democratic representative in the Tennessee State Legislature has gone viral. Many are hailing its civil rights-era moral clarity and its points in common with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
In remarks given on the floor of the Tennessee House on August 1st, Representative John DeBerry excoriated the tactics of those who are rioting, looting, and burning down businesses in major U.S. cities that has led to more than 30 deaths. DeBerry called upon his fellow legislators to remember the manner in which civil rights activists of decades past conducted themselves. What the world could see in them was the lie that was being told about them, DeBerry said of their efforts for justice.
DeBerry recounted that his family raised money to send his father to Washington, D.C., where Martin Luther King Jr. made his famous I Have a Dream speech, where he said he longed for the day when his children would be judged not by their skin color, but by the content of their character. All we do in America right now, DeBerry said, is talk about color. Every issue is about race. It's about color Instead of sitting down at the table like men and women of common sense and common justice and understanding that our enemies are looking with a greedy vigilance upon us as we tear ourselves apart internally. They have been watching us for 50 years, preparing step by step by step for us to kill ourselves. Close quotes.
DeBerry was blindsided earlier this year when state party officials removed him from the House District 90 primary ballot because of his voting record. DeBerry frequently sides with Republicans on issues such as school choice and abortion. His father was a pastor. On a Memphis radio interview, DeBerry said his father taught his family to be overcomers and to build bridges, not to burn and loot.
When looking at a candidate, a lot can be learned by observing the family. The Trump family was on display at the RNC convention, each articulate and well-prepared to face the cameras. From a variety of verified website news posts available for your scrutiny if you wish to call the SWRC office to ask for them, we learn what kind of a family comes from the state of Delaware. They say the apples never fall far from the tree, neither do the watermelons. The Biden family was reviewed in several news sources. In 2017, Joe Biden's niece, Caroline Biden, stole $100,000 through a credit card scam. That's grand larceny. But she was able to cut a deal with the Democratic New York prosecutor and got off scot-free with neither jail time or probation. This was her second arrest. She was able to deal her way out of the first one, too. She's also been in rehab numerous times. Verification from the NewYorkPost.com. Biden's son Hunter was kicked out of the Navy for failing a cocaine drug test. There's more. How did he ever get a naval officer's direct commission? Daddy fixed it. That's found on NBCNews.com. Then Hunter divorced his wife, the mother of his three children, after a year-long affair, to marry his brother's widow. Over the course of the divorce, Hunter drained hundreds of thousands of dollars from the couple's assets by spending extravagantly on his own interests, including drugs, alcohol, prostitutes, strip clubs, and gifts for women with whom he had sexual relations, while leaving the family with insufficient funds to pay legitimate bills. It actually was worse than that, and it's all outlined at DelawareOnline.com. Now, all of this is on top of the billions in compensation his father dubiously arranged for him from communist China and the Ukraine. Again, the NewYorkPost.com for verification. Biden's daughter, Ashley Biden Crine, has been arrested several times for drug charges. While he was VP, she was videotaped snorting cocaine, but the news media decided it wasn't newsworthy and decided not to publish the video. She hid out in the Veep's Delaware home for a week or so until it all blew over. NewYorkPost.com. Okay, what if these things had occurred with Trump's children? They surely are not perfect, but why haven't we heard any of this from the networks or read it in the great national newspapers? Nothing to see here, just move along. Really? 2 Chronicles 6:23 says, "Then hear thou from heaven, and do, and judge thy servants by requiting the wicked, by recompensing his way upon his own head, and by justifying the righteous by giving him according to his righteousness."
The false prophet issue was such a problem in the first century that Jesus addressed it in the Sermon on the Mount, telling his followers in Matthew 7:15, "Beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravening wolves." Simon Peter in 1 Peter 2:1 likewise spoke of false prophets proliferating in the ancient world and said they, quote, "privily shall bring in damnable heresies, even denying the Lord that bought them, and bring upon themselves swift destruction. And many shall follow their pernicious ways, by reason of whom the way of truth shall be evil spoken of."
In the first century, there were false prophets who believed that Jesus was a great teacher or a flashy miracle worker, but not the promised Messiah. C.S. Lewis addressed this when he commented that it was really foolish that people would often say, quote, "I am ready to accept Jesus as a great moral teacher, but I don't accept his claim to be God." That is the one thing we must not say, said Lewis. A man who was merely a man and said the sort of things Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic on a level with the man who says he is a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman, or something worse. You can shut him up for being a fool, you can spit at him and kill him as a demon, or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God. But let us not come up with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us. He did not intend to. Close quotes.
There are those who try to play it safe. They will not deny the existence of God, but neither will they affirm the central role that Jesus Christ, the eternal Son of God, plays in the divine order of things. We have all met people who say, "I believe in God," but what they really mean is that they don't believe that Jesus Christ is the eternal Son of God. People who say, "I believe in God," will also say, "I believe in the force of gravity," or "I believe that the earth is round." The real goal is to be able to say, "I believe God." To believe God is to believe His word and to act on that belief. Genesis 15:6 literally says that Abraham believed the Lord. It was not an issue of believing in the existence of some mysterious being identified as God, but Abraham believed that his descendants would be of such a number that he would not be able to count them, just as one is not able to count the stars in the sky because of their great number.
Jesus calls us to believe Him and to put our faith in Him. The Apostle John wrote in 1 John 4:6, "We are of God. He that knoweth God heareth us. He that is not of God heareth not us. Hereby know we the spirit of truth and the spirit of error."
There has been so much reported on the Black Lives Matter movement. To help explain some of the underlying elements, you should get our special offer today, the book or DVD titled One Race, One Blood. Our toll-free number is 1-800-652-1144. Our address is Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And our website is swrc.com. Thanks for tuning in today. Tune in tomorrow when Pastor Larry talks with Dr. Michael Lake about the Kingdom Priesthood on the Watchman on the Wall program from Southwest Radio Church.